Sorry, well, go from the beginning then.
Yeah, well,
the concept was...
It first caught my eye. There is actually a film of Sus with Ralph Brown, Rafe Spall and Clint Dyer. And it's very good indeed. But it just struck me that this thing really belongs on stage. So I looked it up and found out that it was, in fact, written as a stage play by Barry Keith, who wrote one of my favourite British movies of all time, The Long Good Friday.
A very good film.
Yeah, absolutely. I still think it's...
See old Bob Hoskins.
Exactly. I still think that's one of the best British gangster movies. In fact, one of the best gangster movies, full stop. I think
it's top Get Carter, I'd say.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that was a good one as well. So that caught my eye, that it was a stage play first, because it felt to me that, as brilliant as it was on screen, it had a home on stage. And I'd worked with Nolan Frederick before on a production called King Cotton, which is...
a famous book.
Yeah, by Jimmy McGovern, the play.
Ah.
It was basically a musical, a lot of music in it. And he immediately sprang to mind as being potentially a great Delroy, because Nolan has done a lot of West End theatre. He's just done The Pajama Game. He was in the original cast of Cats. He was in Miss Saigon. They just had a big reunion he was part of and all this. And so he can reach a vast audience. And I've seen him in a small rehearsal room, and I just knew he would be able to tell this story and it really break people's hearts, wouldn't it? So I just knew it could be done. And I also was looking at, on the one hand, you have the culture secretary talking about more people getting involved in the arts. But on the other hand, we've got cuts to welfare and things like this, and people in real need are virtually being criminalised just for being poor.
Is that the sort of compare and contrast with the 70s?
Exactly. Mm. I mean, I was reading the other day, we've got cases of rickets now in the UK, and you just think, what on earth is going on? If the government is talking about a recovery and people are getting rickets, and there's more people than ever before going to food banks.
Well, do you know, it's a weird one, in the sense that quite a few people would say there is a return to them 80s Victorian pound values.
Yeah.
Tough on crime, tough on the causes and all that, Mr. Blair. But that sort of short, sharp shock rhetoric, it's kind of creeped back into the political agenda.
True.
Which is that why you think you need to sort of contrast it and resurrect it?
I think it is as relevant now as it was then, in that sense. I think it's interesting, and I think a very fortunate thing, that we haven't seen quite the rise in crime you'd expect. I think if this beds in, if we don't get rid of this present government, which was not elected anyway, nobody voted for a Tory Lib Dem coalition. And the Lib Dems broke all the promises as soon as they got any power, which is just...
Well, he has apologised.
Well, yes. Well, if he comes round and apologises personally and puts people's lives right, you know, we're getting people with terminal illnesses being told they're fit for work. It is Victorian... punish the poor for being poor. And I think it's an incredible thing that we haven't had a huge rise in crime, but I think they say necessity is the mother of invention. Well, it's also the mother of crime, and if this really beds in and if we don't turn it round, then we will see, I think, crime rising.
Or the expression of Engels was the lowest level of struggle, class struggle.
Yeah.
Crime, the redistribution at the basic level.
Exactly.
If you don't have a communist
equality
of society from the top, you get one from the bottom.
And what we have at the moment
is methods.
What we have at the moment is big corporations dodging tax to the tune of billions, literally billions, and the whole of the NHS could be rebuilt from the ground up with the money that is being avoided in tax from corporations and rich individuals. Yet we have people on benefits being treated as criminals.
Well, we're like two white dudes in 2014.
Yeah.
And I suppose in 1970s to 70, the Sus law period was, you could say, primarily a racist kind of piece of legislation that was very much aimed at containing dissent.
Yeah.
Poverty and...
Absolutely. Well, now they've got a really nice blanket... sort of carte blanche to use.
Good expression.
Yeah. I'll try that again without the door. Yeah, they've got a carte blanche to use stop and search powers now under anti-terrorism laws, and again, it's disproportionately black and minority ethnic people, especially young men, who are being stopped. Now, it's very difficult for anyone to say the anti-terrorism laws are a bad thing, because that sounds like you're potentially saying terrorism is okay.
They're the continuation of the sus.
I think very much so. I think
kind of like was the beginning.
Yeah, even the Home Secretary said that last year there were at least 250,000 illegal stop and searches. Now, if the Home Secretary is admitting that, you've got to suspect that number is a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And it's still the same people who are being stopped and searched. I was speaking to a guy today, Carl, the Russian his nickname is, used to be DJ in Kirkland's many moons ago. And he's a very interesting guy, and he was saying sus is really the London term for it. Up in Liverpool, it was known as suspected person loitering, SPL. And it became loitering with intent. And it just meant the police, if they saw a couple of people hanging around, would ask the names, let them go back on the way. The next week they'd come around again, if they were there again, they'd say, right, you're known to police and you're now loitering. And they'd say, what, we're not doing anything. But the crime was loitering with intent. And there were things like people being done for having offensive weapons who were carrying afro combs. And that came as news to me. I only found that out today. But
so that was partly the sort of a justification, really, just to sort of legitimise the whole process of stopping people for nothing whatsoever.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you hear about it when you go back to the
kind of dictatorship kind of laws, really. In fact,
exactly.
Everyone's a suspect.
And you hear about it, you go back in history and you look at people being deported to Australia for stealing half a loaf, and you think, wow, what a terrible time. But then you talk to people about the 80s in Liverpool, the early 80s, and it's no wonder there were riots. You know, I don't support rioting. I think there are better ways of changing the system. And in effect, a riot just gives them an excuse to crack down.
Yeah.
But I understand it. You know, I understand individual
people.
Well,
they say it's a wild beast with no head.
Yeah.
So no one can control it.
Exactly.
Like it's just
it's like you shake an etch-a-sketch, but you don't get to pick the next picture, you know?
Yeah.
So that's
it just surprises them.
Yeah.
And it hits them in the face.
Exactly.
From nowhere.
Yeah.
All this pressure's built up.
But you've got people like Boris Johnson ordering water cannon. Now, he's doing that for a reason. He is expecting there to be unrest. Now, you could say that's a reaction to some of the things that went on in London and elsewhere, and some of the fires were obviously devastating to families, businesses, individuals, everything. And so you can say it may be a reaction to that, but you've also got to think, well, he's expecting to have to use them. So what exactly have they got planned that is going to cause people to riot, you know?
What I thought was amusing was the health and safety is what held back the police in the riots.
Yeah.
That they said they hadn't had enough cover.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough to sort of cope or deal with, and they stepped back and let the army step forward, and you know, these great community trained people, touchy-feely liaison with the community at all times, suddenly
evaporated.
Yeah, they don't have a clue what to do. Yeah, they don't have anything new in the arsenal, do they? There's nothing, you know, sort of being layered.
No, other than crackdowns. I mean, the latest, well, no, it's not even that recent now, the term kettling really struck me, because there have been lawful demonstrations where people have effectively been detained on the streets and kept without access to water, food, toilets for hours. You've even ended up with pictures in some of the tabloids of people urinating in the streets as if they are disgusting people, when actually they've been given no choice. And the very word kettling, what is a kettle for? It's to make things boil, you know. And these people are not rioting. They are gathered peacefully to protest against some of the draconian laws that are coming in and being provoked. And it's incredible how few of them have responded with violence, you know. And I hope it continues that way, because I don't want to see it go the other way.
No, you're probably right. I think it's more due to the restraint of the protesters than to any restraint by any forces of law and order. It's always been the onus of responsibility on people who've come to demonstrate, not to give a bad show and pretty much like keep their own house in order and steward themselves, and so that's kind of like being in the mindset of a lot of people. And I think that's where you got that difference over the riots, where there was a reaction, kind of like a strange mooted reaction, although people understood someone had been shot.
And yeah.
You know, like what's going on in America, isn't it, still in Ferguson?
Exactly.
That's sort of like a gut reaction of everybody.
Exactly.
To want justice.
And it's sort of noticeable. Whenever you hear any news about someone having been killed through contact with the police, you know sooner or later they're going to say it's a young black man. And that is just wrong. You know, there is no justification for that. When you look at, say, people who compete in the Olympics from around the world, and a lot of countries have black representatives at the Olympics, and they show grace under pressure, they show incredible self-control, amongst the best athletes in the world. So why, when someone gets arrested, they suddenly become clumsy or suddenly become unable to control themselves? I do think some of it is provoked, and whether it's deliberate or not, it is provoked by repeated stop and searches, by people from certain ethnic groups feeling like they're being targeted, etc. And when you find that many people who are at, you know, the sort of enforced poverty end of the economic scale, and they're also being treated as criminals, it's no wonder that sometimes they react.
Do you think the legislation, the way it was designed, was like this crumbling empire, no longer has its colonies, and they turn their venom literally inwards. Like people say, it was legislation similar to Ireland that had been enacted on the streets in Belfast and by the military occupation, and this was the noticeable progression you could see was the militarisation of the police, and with it those laws that just remove civil rights or civilian anything, you know, that's it, streets are no longer yours, it's basically that.
Well, I can't remember who said it, but a wise man said that whatever your country's foreign policy is now will be home policy, you know, a couple of decades down the line or less. And I think there's an element of truth in it. Now, at the same time, I've got a contrast, for example, when you look at the Stephen Lawrence case down in London, and you compare it, you know, I apologise to bring up these names because this is obviously still very painful memories to people. But when Anthony Walker was killed up here, it seems to me that those two cases were handled incredibly differently.
Yeah.
And we're even in talks with Merseyside Police about using this play as a training tool. So, you know, there are shafts of light, shafts of hope in there. There's one of the top policemen up here, CSI Moore, is very progressive in his thinking. And, you know, he has talked about potentially getting this play on as a training exercise. And it will be a case of how not to do things, you know. So I don't want to. I certainly don't want to.
So the positive and the negative. Like that's convenient.
And I do think that things have moved on in general from the 70s and 80s. I don't think it's moved far enough. And if you look, say, the inquest website, the number of deaths of black people, it fluctuates, but it averages about 2 a year. And it's too many, you know. It's really as simple as that. And it as I say, it fluctuates, but there is no overall trend of it reducing. And now you're getting private contractors involved. And, you know, I do think there's a world of difference between a career policeman. Like, we were advised on police procedure by Graham Yip, who's now retired, but was one of the senior policemen in Liverpool and, you know, headed up a lot of murder investigations, one of the, you know, the best coppers we've had. And he was brilliant and very supportive of what we were doing. So there are people in the police and ex-policemen who do have a wider view and are capable of seeing how to have a policy of how to police people on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's obviously a question, isn't it, like institutional racism and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
That probably is promoted from the government to regional. Because I think Liverpool's had this issue flared up several times, and mm-hmm. it's passed, and it's quite a sort of like a thread throughout the history of the city. It's you know, probably since people began to write about it, it's going back to the abolitionist here on the hill, the churches over the road. Mm-hmm. There's always been that, you know, someone not being regarded like, you know, Mr. Farage, like as British.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, ergo, it's okay to treat people brutally or mm-hmm. remove the rights,
yeah.
basically harass. And you still have, don't you, here, the Orange Lodge march. It's clear that yeah. Catholics off the street, like it's permitted. It's not regarded as offensive. It's not regarded as a threat, or it's just regarded as good fun. And then about one step away from UKIP and others.
Yes.
Ideology, like that.
Yeah, and I think the media has a bit of a case to answer here, because UKIP have received so much press attention, and some of it very critical. So on that side of it, you know, I've got to agree that they are there to be criticised, but they are being given the oxygen of publicity and being treated as if they are a force in politics, which they are starting to become.
The fourth party.
Yeah, I mean, and that's shocking, and it's a shocking indictment of the way things are and the way the people in power manage to turn our attention against fake enemies, you know. And it's people on benefits are now scroungers, and single parents, you know, single mothers were vilified. I can't imagine anyone who works harder than a single parent. You know, and why that should be a criminal, almost a criminal offence, to be a single parent.
Well, it's the morality that's been revived, isn't it? That Victorian.
Isn't it crazy? Because the single parent is the one who stayed to look after the child. They're not the one who's left. So how they've even vilified on that basis, on any moral grounds, is astounding. And we get issues in the press like three generations of the same family never working. And one of the newspapers decided to look into it to find some of these families. They couldn't find a single one. There wasn't one. I think it was Ian Duncan.
Once the mud slung.
Exactly.
It's kind of...
It's a soundbite and it sticks.
It's like, you know, the fans pissing on the dead bodies.
Exactly right.
Through the knot, like, it'll stick and it'll
exactly
be,
right.
Well, it'll be conjured up with the first thoughts.
Yeah.
Hillsborough.
Exactly.
Well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't.
Exactly. But it's such a blatant headline that it just feels like they can't possibly be lying. But you see the same newspapers again and again. The same happened with John Paul de Menezes, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah.
Certain newspapers printed what can only have been deliberate misinformation. The same with Ian Tomlinson, and it's only because there was footage and witnesses of those two things that the truth came out very quickly.
Well, I think, what was it with him, that they shouted stop and...
Yeah, and he'd vaulted over some barriers, which wasn't true. The same with Ian Tomlinson, that he'd somehow, I can't remember what he was supposed to have done, but then you see the footage, he just walks in front of the police. And, you know, even if he did that to be a little bit of a nuisance, which you can't really say he did from the footage, he doesn't deserve to be dead for it. And for the misinformation to come out so quickly, you've got to wonder who created that misinformation. And if you look back at Hillsborough, if people had had camera phones, you wonder how much of it would have been proven to be untrue within a day or two.
Well, they also, what is kind of like scary is that quite a lot of the services agreed to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah.
Too. Quite a lot of, not just the police, but quite a lot of the,
yeah.
you know, for some bizarre reason, agreed by a conspiracy of silence.
Yeah.
Daring to doubt the police's version was, you know,
well, I can imagine how even decent people can be fooled into thinking that's the way to go, because I imagine the message from the top was, if we allow it to, this will become a lack of faith in the services, the police service in particular. And I can imagine people being convinced on that basis that this was a one-off, it was, you know, some sort of accident, and yes, mistakes were made. But even the mistakes that were made, I think it was Duckenfield who opened the gates. And I believe he opened the gates because he believed people were in danger of being seriously injured and even killed outside. So good on him for making a decision based on trying to help people. If he'd have come out and said that at the time, that he did this in good faith, believing he was helping to save people from death and serious injury, I think a lot of people in Liverpool would at least have some time for him. You know, whereas as it is now, I think he's pretty much been farmed out to pasture and has pretty much been, I imagine, silenced on the basis of getting his pension and that sort of thing. Because otherwise he's possibly looking at misconduct or even manslaughter charges. And
yeah, they'll look for a sacrificial lamb, won't they?
Exactly. If it comes to it, they will. And it'll be the lowest possible person they can hang out to dry. You know, I'm sure all this sounds very cynical, but I think people's eyes have been opened by things like Hillsborough and like, say, Orgreave, the miners' strike, where, you know, there were cavalry charges against peaceful strikers, which is, you know, unheard of. And
well, I suppose that brings us then to the sort of question of the how this kind of law is presented to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Hoover's FBI and his G-Men campaign.
Yeah.
And its kind of effectiveness as a, you know, magic solution.
Yeah.
It's all kind of romanticised and hyped and sold to the general public.
Yeah, and you can understand people's reactions because it is put in pretty black and white terms. And it seems pretty obvious what the answer is. So for all this stuff about ISIS at the moment, well, they seem like a pretty awful bunch, so it seems pretty obvious that we should do something about them. But it seems to me that we've gone to war in Syria, essentially, on the basis of some criminal acts, it seems to me. Some murders, and pretty horrific murders, no doubt about it. But these murders, for me, do not constitute an act of war. If they were treated as criminals, it's almost like UKIP, you know, we give them the oxygen of publicity. I read, I couldn't swear to it being true, that there was no group who called themselves Al-Qaeda until they were christened that by the Americans because they needed a term that could be used in the media, essentially. Now, that sounds incredibly cynical. I have no idea whether it's true, but I can imagine it might be. And ISIS were a group that we were supporting and the United States were supporting against Assad. And now we're supporting the other side against ISIS. And we do this again and again and again. We arm a group, we support them. The Americans are a lot worse than we are. Since the Second World War, I think there's only one year they haven't been involved in a war. And they have overthrown more democratically elected governments than any other government in the world, any other military power. And they keep doing it. And then they feign surprise when they find new enemies springing up.
Well, I suppose, would you say you play to a degree with Sus in the... Well, I mean, I remember it, but probably the next generation, so Thatcher's children, like, might not. Because they probably can't conceive of a period as bad as we are now,
true,
so to speak. But,
true.
That sort of... legislation is almost basically making the population terrorist, you know, counter-revolutionary kind of legislation, as they say, you know, everybody's a potential threat to the governments, to this law and order, to everything. You know, the massive repression is justified, basically, because, you know, without it, there will be anarchy on the streets, there will be basically unrest throughout the land.
Yeah, I think it's easy for it to be painted that way. Is that the whole reason for it? I don't know. I think again, from a government's point of view, they've got to be seen to be doing something. If there are headlines about terrorism, then the government cannot be seen to be doing nothing. And, you know, I think that's the same with justice. Justice has to be done and has to be seen to be done. But when things become unjust and can be seen to be unjust, I think there is a real problem. And I think we give up our civil liberties a bit too easily under certain supposed threats. Now, when you look at the London Underground bombings, not all of these things are imaginary and not all of them are entirely hyped. And there are people who are prepared to do civilians harm. And I don't care who you are, if you are a military organisation or a terrorist organisation and you are killing civilians, then you are in the wrong no matter what. But when you've got legislation that is basically tarring ordinary people as if they are a potential problem, so that ISIS becomes the most recognised face of being a Muslim, for example, the most recognised face of Islam, when they don't represent Islam any more than the Ku Klux Klan represent Christianity, I think there is a problem, and a real problem, and I don't think it's entirely accidental.
No, it's a very thumbnail sketch, isn't it? I mean, the other night was a programme called Storyville about Israel, which was just a documentary film interviewing the security Shin Bet, Secret Service, all of the retired officials, and virtually every one of them, now that they've retired, said the policy of, you know, occupation in the Gaza is completely wrong. It's never going to solve anything. We should pull out, blah, blah, blah. But the government's not listening, and there's no government brave enough to sort of halt what's going on. And, but as people are always wise after the events, they wait till they retire before they do it.
Exactly.
Start reflecting about it. And,
yeah.
And the guy even said, most of us, we realise now that we can think independently for once, that we're pretty much to the left of what's happened. The whole.
Well, Israel isn't a huge country, and you sort of understand, given the way Jewish people have been treated through the centuries, and it has been centuries of pogroms and murders and displacements, that if I was Jewish and I had a homeland after all these decades, centuries of abuse and murder and pogroms, then I would want to defend it. And again, I think it comes down to the definition of what is defence. And when you have people who are genuinely embattled, as Jewish people have been and remain throughout the world, it's very easy to convince them that they need a very, very strong military and a very strong military solution. But in Israel, I mean, it was Eisenhower, I think, who warned about the military-industrial complex. Israel has, I think it's about the fourth or fifth biggest military in the world. It's not a huge country geographically, not a huge country in terms of population, but they also have one of the biggest arms industries, and they earn billions.
What?
Absolutely billions from their arms industry.
Well, what I thought, I don't know what the contents of the players like to say, but what I was thinking was the upshot of these guys was that the sort of like conclusion of quite a few of these sort of like ex-officers was that they'd become cruel and indifferent. What they'd started out to stop.
Yeah.
You know, because like quite a few of them had escaped Holocaust Nazi camps and all.
Exactly.
They actually become, and then applying it to Britain, you got this, you know, suppose like it's a militarised country, really. As someone said, that they don't need to impose a dictatorship in Britain because everybody always stands in a queue anyway. You know, they don't need to enforce it. It's kind of like the reserve and the conformity are already in people's heads.
Exactly. I think someone said there will be no revolution in Britain while the water's still running and the toilet's flush, you know.
That's probably why people get let loose at festivals.
True, true.
But yeah, that's an element, isn't it, that they justify, you know, this kind of like overtop reaction, sus, by saying, well, these people hang about in the streets, you know, never sit still, got music going and all that business, and it's kind of like not British, not normal, it's not, you know, stand in line, keep your tie straight, walk the straight line, it's foreign culture, alien culture, it's all that sort of like terminology, and there's unless we're kind of like a bastion of standards, a vanguard that we need to preserve, not unlike the man who's just popped his clogs in Belfast, Paisley.
Yeah.
He's kind of going against the stream with that medieval rhetoric. Well,
exactly, and rhetoric works. I mean, this is why people use it, and it's part of the reason, I think, why people are disengaging from politicians, because we've started to, maybe not consciously, but at least subconsciously, recognise the tricks.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of, you listen to them, and you sort of already in a state of disbelief, because you know you've been fooled so many times, you know. And that the tricks now are not ringing so true because so many people know them and use them.
Do you think that Scottish referendum threw them, that sage in there?
Well, I think it created a huge interest in politics, both sides of that border, I think throughout the British Isles. And I could have imagined it going the other way. I think there are things already in Scottish politics, for example, the way they run their NHS and the way they run access to education, which are streets ahead of the way they're done in England or the rest of Britain. And I think
one thing I remember is they did let the guy who allegedly blew off Lockerbie off, you know, terrorist or not. He was served his judicial term and that was it.
Yeah.
I could not see it happening in Tory England.
No, I don't know enough about that to comment. I know there's a huge amount of information and I imagine misinformation, as it always is with these things, so I just don't know enough about that to comment.
Well, that was the real bugbear of the Tory press, that this guy Salmond, he was the father of it all, right, mm-hmm. was going to allow this wanted terrorist amnesty, you know, but it was just Scottish law. It was just, I say, miles ahead,
yeah,
in and carried out to the letter. Not interested in the rantings of the press, just the way it operated.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing that we sometimes do quite well, and I'm reminded of some of the headlines we've had about clerics of hate, etc. And some of these people do have pretty rabid views, but we deal with them through the rule of law, and, you know, it would be very easy to just lock them up or just deport them without recourse to law. And instead, what we do, we go through the process, and sometimes it takes a long time. I think that's one of our strengths. When we do things properly by the rule of law, I think we can be an example to the world. Well, I think we weaken ourselves when we don't.
That's probably what's been sort of like provoked, like a constitutional crisis about the question of the rule of law, English mm-hmm. law, as it was termed. It's kind of like upset some of these accepted norms. And, you know, people have said, "What constitution?" You know, it's quite a sort of like everywhere else has got one, but there is none here. We're still subjects, not citizens, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everybody's like, "How much of a?"
But it is an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, we are a country where we have even some quite archaic laws, which are sometimes brought back in and used in very different ways. We're not quite a country, I would say, with a completely formal constitution. Whether we should or shouldn't be, I think, is an interesting question and not one I can answer. But I do think when we stick to our principles, and I think even now around the world, there are still countries where Britain has a certain amount of respect in terms of being a law-abiding country and doing things and having a sense of fair play. Even politeness, you know, is appreciated.
The driver from Manchester, Alan, is it? And that's provoked such a sort of reaction, I think, yeah. in Manchester. People just saying, well, may not have thought either way about ISIS, what the hell, who's right, who's wrong, but the treatment of someone who's completely sort of innocent, not just that,
yeah.
helping feed people and everything else, mm-hmm. it's just struck a chord, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was
absolutely
justice, like so.
Exactly, and I think that is a key phrase. I think if people seek justice, then they won't go far wrong. It's like, if you look at the situation in South Africa, I was lucky enough to be at a conference in Durban, which Nelson Mandela addressed. It was the World AIDS conference. And, you know, he deliberately set up a Truth and Reconciliation Committee. It wasn't just a Truth Committee. It wasn't just a Justice Committee. It was Truth and Reconciliation.
Yes.
And I think you have to embed that in whatever you're trying to do. Because if you just seek justice, it can be veered off into revenge. If you just seek truth, then it can be the same thing. Or it can be twisted to, you know, attack people. I think it has to be at the heart of the policies from the top to the bottom of creating a good, stable society. And that can only happen with justice, including social justice, including economic justice. Because it doesn't matter how free you are told you are, if you're poor, you are not free.
You've got that Pistorius trial at the moment, haven't you, going on? And despite attempts to turn it into an O.J. Simpson, entertainment, mm-hmm. they've kind of resisted the pressure and, gone through the slow, which may not be exciting, but ponderous process of evaluating all the facts.
Yes.
And, despite this histrionics and things like that, they're drawing conclusions at their own mm-hmm. pace, their own time, and without sort of, I thought the circus of the O.J. trial kind of predicted the outcome of it, mm-hmm. which, it really made it entertainment, crime and all that become mm-hmm. entertainment, whereas, so this time around, despite every, probably no doubt, financial pressure to make it a bloody circus, they've just, sought some kind of balance, and mm-hmm. which is a bit of a, like I thought about what someone said about the Scottish people, the guy in one of the audiences, John Snow, said, well, we don't really care about the concept of nation, because in 10 years' time it might not exist. Borders are just lines on a map. He said, we might have an app in the future instead of a government that says, would you like to vote on cottage cheese or this? Their attitude was fantastic. How much they're prepared to sort of see themselves as world citizens and aggressive.
There are things that are going on, for example, PFI. Hospitals, for example, it's like buying a hospital on a credit card, and it's not only our children, our grandchildren. These things are never going to be paid for. I could easily imagine them being repossessed or privatised or whatever they do. And there is something going on called the Transatlantic Trade Treaty, which bypasses national laws and means if a country, for example, declines to have GM food imported, then they can be sued for loss of earnings from the people who are creating GM food. And for me, this is one of the greatest threats to our liberty, and hardly anyone knows about it.
Yeah, it's probably the expense of the trade unions, isn't it? That the campaign, well, they've had the strikes on yesterday for the health service, mm-hmm. despite an underwhelming report of the news and media.
As I understand it, I may be wrong, but as I understand it, it was a work to rule, but it's being described as a strike. I could be wrong, but I think locally it was a work to
4-hour walkout, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, was a 4? So
it's they were covered, and they did
exactly.
cover. So it was a bit of the old style work to rule,
So when people say, think about the patients, they already have, and that was taken into account.
Apparently the RCN, it was never struck in the lights. They went back on the decision, and they decided to maintain personnel, which obviously, to that degree, someone has to stay on, and
exactly
cover shifts.
So these things are done by people who don't go into the NHS to get rich.
No,
they go into the NHS by and large because they have a vocation.
Yeah,
and that vocation is destroyed when you have private companies coming in and putting people on 0-hour contracts. Because if you don't even know your job is secure, it's very difficult to do that job with real spirit. And it is a real spirit of wanting to help.
Yeah. Well, like you said,
I best make myself available.
Yeah, well,